Wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
If I could, Judge, 2 minutes.
All right.
And may it please the court, my name is Anthony Ballady and I represent the appellant Joseph Melick. The situation in this case is that we have the Commonwealth introducing records that have purportedly under the business record exception, certainly hearsay, that have no indicia of reliability.
Let me ask you a threshold question that seems key to how it's analyzed. Is the information that is sought to be introduced, is it a record of the business or is it a record of leadsonline.com?
I think that is a good question because it partially goes to what was established at trial. What we know is that Leeds Online is a company in Texas that I suppose holds these records. There was nobody, they were accessed by the officer through Leeds Online. There was some indication that someone, whether it's Ken's wife or Joe's wife, whoever it was, transfers the information to Leeds Online.
And certainly somebody at the business has to take the picture of the driver's license, the picture of the jewelry.
Someone. We don't know who, but okay. Apparently someone. Yes.
An employee. And to me, that makes it, since all the information necessarily comes from the business, it strikes me that it's the business's record and Leeds Online is essentially a giant virtual file cabinet that multiple people have access to. Is that... Tell me either that's reasonable or why you think that's wrong.
Well, I think that's an accurate statement of the situation. We don't deny that Leeds Online can be accessed, at least by the officer, that the officer has no knowledge of how the records get there. I think he maybe vaguely testifies that they come from pawn shops, they are sent to their servers, I guess, and that's the end of, he says, I guess, and that's the end of that. As to how they get to Leeds Online, the...
And that the end user who goes to the virtual file cabinet can't alter the document in any way. The information is what the information is.
At the very least, that Officer Barker could not manipulate the information. But how the information gets there in the first place is where it becomes a mystery.
Well, let me make sure I understand. You agree, then, that it's the record of the pawn shop. It's not the record of this Leeds Online, or going back to when you actually had the shop book. All Leeds Online is the equivalent of the old journal book that would be brought out that contained these records. Do I understand correctly? You agree that it's the pawn shop's record, not Leeds Online record. That's just something up, some server up in the cloud, which is nothing but a computer, and would be no different than if this pawn shop had its own computer in the back room where it put in this information and happened to physically have the data on its machine in the back as opposed to somebody else's machine up in the cloud.
Judge, I think theoretically it could be both or either's.
No, I'm asking
record.
You for which it is and which is your position, because I understood you conceded that it was the record of the pawn shop, and I just want to make sure that's correct.
Judge, if, for purposes of argument, if it's the record of the pawn shop, we don't know where it came from. We don't... There was a transaction that no one remembers. It was uploaded to the cloud or to Leeds Online by someone who we can't identify.
But the lack of memory of the transaction is of no moment. Because, of course, the whole reason we have the business records exception is to record things that people aren't going to remember.
And, Judge, I would argue that it goes to the trustworthiness and reliability of this information in the first place, why we have hearsay exceptions. Because the circumstances in which this information is obtained lends itself towards being credible, even if in some situations where people don't remember the actual transaction. Nobody remembers the transaction. Nobody remembers who uploads it to Leeds Online. There either is no or nobody can identify the custodian of records. It's a situation where two pawn shop employees of apparently equal...
Let's walk through the actual rule, though. The record was made at or near the time of the acts, events, calculations. well, definitionally, the taking of the picture of the jewelry and the driver's license had to happen at the time of the sale, or at least the picture of the driver's license had to occur at the time of the sale.
But, Judge, the testimony that was given was that though the picture was taken at the time of the sale, the information was entered at least a few days later, I believe, was testimony from one of the individuals, but they didn't know when it was entered.
Right, right. But the photograph itself definitionally was created at the time of the sale.
Yes.
Is a few days later too late for the... Are there any Virginia cases on business records exception saying that collecting the data but then putting it into the final form in a period of 72 hours is too long?
All the case law I could find was that it was a fact-specific analysis. There was one that said within the same day was contemporaneous. But within 72 hours, again, the 72 hours is based on the memory of these people who don't even know how it gets up there in the first place. I'm not sure if we can take that as gospel at this point, that it was within 72 hours. Even if it was 72 hours, I would argue that's arguably not contemporaneous.
The record itself, given the testimony that it was done for every transaction, the course of the regularly conducted activity, that's the purchasing of items, jewelry and other items. It's established that that's a regularly conducted activity of Hampton Roads Exchange when it was in operation, correct?
The transactions, yes, are a regularly conducted business activity. How it's transferred to someone else to be uploaded, we don't know how regular that is, that aspect of it.
But Mr. Cantrell, the owner, testified that for every purchase that's made, this record was created. A record was created in this exact way. However, recognizing your point that it's murky exactly how it got created, who hit send, that type of thing, who put it all on the form, it's a regular... It regularly occurs when the regularly conducted activity occurs.
I'd agree with that, that it's for every transaction.
All right. Did you find any case since the adoption of the evidence rule that defined what another qualified witness is because it's records custodian, or another qualified witness? Because I haven't found one.
Judge, what I could find was anyone with knowledge, which isn't helpful at all, but... No, Judge, I can't be more specific than you are.
Now, under the common law history of the business record exception, the Commonwealth points to fraud investigators, vice presidents of banks, people who are familiar with the overall operation as being sufficient as the equivalent of a custodian of the records. If the owner of the business, who also works the counter for 50% of the time that the counter is open, isn't another qualified witness, who would be?
It's not necessarily that he's not a qualified witness. It's that what his testimony was did not reach the level of making the evidence itself admissible. I'm not saying... an owner should know these things. I would assume that most owners of businesses would have some idea how their records become online, especially a pawn shop. But this person apparently does not. And all of his testimony went towards this idea that he doesn't really know what's going on, how things get uploaded, how things get inputted into the system, and then wind up on the cloud. And then we have a detective who, he says he's looked at it before, and he relies on it, but he's not within the business. He's not one of the people involved in the transaction.
Is there anything about, and I want to focus on the two photographic pieces, the photograph of the license, Mr. Mellick's license, and the photograph of the actual piece of jewelry. Is there anything in the record at all to even suggest that's anything other than just a photographic file that was uploaded to the cloud? Because it seems to me that photographs, we tend to view them as being trustworthy depictions of what, well, they depict.
And I would say we do that because we always ask that question of, is this a true and accurate depiction of what you of the image at the time when you said, I can't speak properly right now, but understand that question that we always ask. And here we don't have that. We just have, I always take a picture of the ID, or I would have taken a picture of the ID, something to that effect. It is a photograph, but it's accompanied by all this other identifying information, the identifying information of the person who purportedly pawned it, what the jewelry actually was. We have a picture of the jewelry, but we have more of a description of things that we can't see just by looking at it.
But
I can't tell just by looking at it.
But does the picture of the license, given that the picture of the license matches the description of the person who pawned it, doesn't that those two things in concert make the total more trustworthy, don't they?
I would argue, Judge, all the information that's given on the description of the person could be from the license itself. So they don't make it more trustworthy. They just are each other. It's not. It's just an additional version of the same information.
It shows I copied it down correctly, at least.
Whoever took it down copied it down correctly. But it doesn't independently bolster the trustworthiness of the record or the idea that it was, and going to Simon of Error 2, Mr. Melick himself who actually pawned these items.
But on Simon of Error 2, regardless of how we resolve the evidentiary question regarding the hearsay exception, we consider all of the evidence, whether properly admitted or not, correct?
Yes, Judge.
And so that evidence would establish opportunity. He lived in the house. Motive. He was mad that she kept some of his stuff or he hadn't gotten all of his stuff. That someone possessing his driver's license or a reasonable facsimile thereof presented it when the stolen items were sold, and he confessed to Mr. Fino.
Judge, I would argue there are the multiple cases cited in my brief that go to the idea that just because there's a record of someone using an ID, pawning an item, that was not sufficient. Many of those convictions were reversed. As for the Mr. Fino aspect...
How many of those were reversed that came with a confession?
There was the one, I believe it was Daly, I could look through my notes to see who it was, but he said something to the effect of, I pawned some of that jewelry, or I pawned that stuff, something to that effect. There was a confession that was still overturned. This, I will concede this is a little bit different than that, in that we have, again, what was said to Mr. Fino purportedly. I don't know how much the court relied on it in making its ultimate determination. I don't think there was any reference to Mr. Fino when the bench was making its final ruling as to guilt or innocence. So I don't know how much the court relied on it, whether it discarded all that testimony. I don't know. And I don't think the court can say, well, even without knowing how much weight the court gave Mr. Fino, we're still going to find that that confession was sufficient, even without the pawn shop records. But I think at the end of this hearsay exception, of this business records exception, there's kind of the catch-all that none of the evidence proves or indicates any untrustworthiness or unreliability. And I think if there was ever a situation where the testimony established unreliability, untrustworthiness, it's this one, where we don't know where it came from, where the memory of the person who conducted the transaction, I don't remember any of it. The one thing he does remember is that it wasn't worth more than $20. Apparently, despite what the paperwork says. So the one thing he does remember is in contrast to what these records say. These records, again, where we don't know where they came from. So, Judge, keeping all that in mind, I would argue that even if we have the confession did not go towards value. So what we're left with is the statement from the... And if we don't have the records, what we're left with is... It was pawned... It wasn't worth more than $20. The other guy doesn't remember any transaction at all, wasn't involved in it, didn't upload it. I think we still have that value issue that's mentioned in my
brief. The owner of the property testified that the value was more than $200.
And, Judge, then we have a conflict between the testimony. The person who buys and sells jewelry saying it's not more than $15, $20. The person who owns it saying it's $16,000 or whatever it was.
And that's a question of fact, right?
Which was not resolved by the fact finder. There's, again, no mention at the conclusion of the case. I find that it was worth...
Well, it's implicitly resolved when he's convicted.
I'm disregarding it. Well, because there's all the testimony together, there's no statement that I'm disregarding the testimony of Mr. Cantrell that it was less than $20 and I'm crediting the records over that testimony, or I'm crediting Miss the victim over that testimony. It's just not there.
You have 2 seconds left.
So I ask the court to reverse
the
conviction.
We may give you 30 seconds. Ms. Yates?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Rachel Yates on behalf of the Commonwealth. Your Honor, the trial court properly admitted the business records in this case.
Whose business record? Whose record is it?
It is the exchange's business record, Your Honor.
Why?
The person who took down the information would come from the exchange. It is their requirement to keep that record, and they are the ones who otherwise satisfy the requirements. And in terms of a case which supports the idea that even though the form of that information was later uploaded onto Leeds Online, that doesn't negatively impact its admissibility.
I was only able to find one case in the country that deals with Leeds Online and a business records exception. And the appellate court in Louisiana thought it was Leeds Online's record, apparently simply because they held it. Why doesn't that just make intuitive sense?
Well, Your Honor, in terms of an intuitive sense, I think the person who transcribed the information, obtained the information, and otherwise is in charge of uploading the information, I think it makes intuitive sense that it's the exchange's record for that reason. But in terms of a specific case, I did not look in other jurisdictions for cases that had to do with Leeds Online. I only looked at Virginia law and in terms of analogous situations. And the one that I found would be Automatic Sprinkler, which I cited on my brief. And in that case, there was an issue with an individual who was in charge of getting timesheets for payroll purposes. And that individual did not come to court and testify. Instead, what was used was the transcribed information onto payroll records. And the Supreme Court of Virginia in that case essentially said that it was a mere exercise in arithmetic to transfer information from one source to another. It otherwise did not impact any sort of it did not otherwise impact its trustworthiness or reliability. And so I cite that as authority for this is just a mere transcription of form. But otherwise, everything that has to do with these records came from the exchange.
You raise a 5A18 argument regarding one of the five subparts of the exception that the Commonwealth argues this falls within. As the proponent of the hearsay, arguing that it's within exception, the burden was on the Commonwealth to establish all five, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Then why isn't the defendant's objection hearsay sufficient to cover all five?
Because the defendant, in this case, Mr. Malik, when objecting, still has to make his objection with reasonable certainty.
But the objection is certain. It's hearsay. It's an out-of-court statement offered for the truth of the matter asserted. Why doesn't that cover the whole thing?
In that case, Your Honor, the specific responses raised at trial were limited only to certain issues. So had the issue been simply hearsay and there's no response and there's nothing else for the trial court to have then gleaned all of the factors used in 2.8036, then there might be a different issue. But in this case, the arguments were specifically limited to only certain factors. So because of that, it would be reasonable for the fact finder to think the only issues this person is raising that relate to whether the business records exception applies are the ones specifically being articulated to it. And so for that reason, the Commonwealth did make a 5A18 argument as to two of those. In terms of the second assignment of error, Your Honor, the evidence was sufficient to support Mr. Malik's conviction for grand larceny in this case, but it isn't necessary for this court to necessarily reach the merits, and that's because there are issues with what was raised in 5A18 bars any issue as to identity, which was the substance of the brief in this case, because the issue of identity wasn't presented to the trial court. The ends of justice exception would not apply in this case. As to value, the only arguments made went to an allegation that the evidence was inconsistent and there was an issue with general credibility. And that was again raised today, this issue of inconsistency with value and the fact that Mr. Cantrell testified that the jewelry that the victim in this case obtained when she first went to the exchange to go looking for her missing jewelry, he said it was only worth maybe $15 to $20. And so he let her just take it right then and there. But that limitation on the value of those specific pieces is different from the variety of jewelry that was later found and the variety of jewelry that was missing. So the evidence isn't inconsistent. It's just looking at an isolated piece. That was what Mr. Cantrell was referring to when he mentioned the $20 value limitation. So the Commonwealth's evidence was not inconsistent.
I asked your opponent the question. Did you find any case since the adoption of the rules of evidence that defines the phrase in 22.8, 2803.6, another qualified witness?
I did not, Your Honor.
And that's not a term that readily defines itself, it seems to me.
I don't believe it's easy to come to terms with, other than to look at the development of case law prior to the adoption of these rules. And when we look at this, as my opposing counsel, I think, correctly pointed out, the issue is, do you have familiarity with how companies keep and maintain these records, and do you have access to them? And that seems to come from a variety of cases. So I imagine that this other qualified witness would include those people rather than just the specific custodian. But otherwise, I don't have a better answer to the court's question.
Thank you.
If there are no other arguments, otherwise I would rely on my brief and ask the court to please affirm the trial court in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We took up the time. I promised you at least 30 seconds. I'm magnanimous. You can have a minute.
And Judge, just taking a step back, we are not that far afield from a situation where an officer simply goes online, Googles something, this says that, nobody remembers anything about how that information got up there, but the records say it. So we're so far afield from the Confrontation Clause. As Your Honors have pointed out today, no one from Leeds Online testified. There was no indication of how Leeds Online maintains these records. They're an out-of-state business. Again, the actual testimony that was offered by the Commonwealth at trial was inconsistent with themselves. Both of the employees, comically blaming each other's wives for how it gets up there. And then once it goes to Leeds Online, Your Honor said send gets hit. We don't even know if that happened. Does it get faxed? Does it get emailed? Does it get uploaded? Does a physical copy somewhere, anywhere? We don't know. And for that reason, Judge, I ask the court to reverse the conviction, or failing that, to remand for a new trial.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge.
This time, the court will...